So it's scheduled to Bishop Prabhupada's class, but we just asked Ramananda Prabhu to speak something on Rasi Yatra because it's Sharad Purnima today. So he's correctly accepted and he's speaking from Krishna book. So his grace to Ramananda Prabhu Ki.
Jai!
Bishop Prabhupada's Krishna book Ki.
Jai!
Hare Krishna. Are we ready to roll? Okay, so there's a very nice song which is how Prabhupada introduced the Krishna book. Many of you will know this song. If you don't, I'm sure you'll pretty soon pick up the words. It's nice and simple, but it's a very beautiful song. And this song is one that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to sing when he was traveling through the forests of Jarikanda and traveling south through India. He would simply sing this long song, "Oh my dear Lord Krishna, oh Lord, please protect me, please maintain me, oh Ram, oh Raghava, oh hero of the Yadu dynasty, please protect me." So it's a very nice song. So, and it goes something like that. Krishna, 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 hey.
Krishna, Krishna.
Krishna, 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 Krish
All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gaura. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Sometimes explain to the children the meaning of this Hari Hari. But Hari, we ask sometimes the children, do you have any children in your class called Hari? And either way, even if they know one, you can explain the meaning. That Hari means, I am stealing all your troubles away. So we call it Hari Hari. We are requesting the Lord to kindly steal all our troubles away so that we can completely focus on Krishna. Anyway, so this Krishna book that Srila Prabhupada has so kindly given us, I remember the first time I caught my eyes on this Krishna book, it was way back, I think it was, must have been 1972, and living in Berry Place. Which is the temple we had before we got Soho Street. It's just in front of the British Museum. And to this day, I've still never been inside the British Museum. But anyway, all of a sudden one day, you know, we were a very young movement up until those days. We'd had some Back to Godhead magazines and the occasional blue volumes of Bhagavad Gita, the early days. And all of a sudden, the prasadam room, which was in the basement, was filled up with these big boxes of books. And I was thinking, what on earth is inside all these boxes? And they happened to be the big silver Krishna books. They were the first printing that had just arrived. And we saw all these giant boxes of books, and just filling up the whole prasadam room. And so I asked, what are we going to do with all these books? And one of the devotees told me, oh, we're going to sell them. How are we going to do that? We had no idea, because book distribution hadn't really taken off. Nobody really knew how to do that at all. And it was really amazing. But it's such beautiful books, and who could fail to be captivated? So we took it on trust, and all right, well, somehow we're going to try and distribute all these amazing books. And Of course, in the due course of time, they went out of print. And nowadays, what are distributed in this smaller version, also very, very beautiful. There's something very quaint and special about all the pictures in those books, because this has so many amazing pictures of Krishna's pastimes inside these books. So if you ever get a chance to get a copy or see a copy, then they're lovely pictures, but more than the pictures also, which are windows into the spiritual world, is the most fascinating books. Now today, of course, is Lord Sri Krishna's Saradiya Rasayatra. And in some places they're observing the beginning of Kartik today. But on our Vaishnava calendar, we understand that the month of Kartik begins tomorrow. But this Rasayatra is a very nice section of the Krishna book. In fact, it's described in the Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada writes, he explains that Krishna, he's saying that, actually I have many wonderful pastimes, but when I remember this Rasadas, then my mind races to go and enjoy this wonderful pastime. So this Rasalila is considered the most super excellent of all Krishna's pastimes. But in order to understand the Rasalila, we can see that this is divided in the Krishna book into five chapters. And they're long and they're elaborate and they're extraordinarily beautiful, but they're incredibly important to understand. Because if we want to know what Krishna's Rasalila is all about, then it really is worth the effort of trying to read these five chapters, because it begins with the introduction to the Rasalila, so that we get some idea about what this is all about. And then, of course, that's chapter 29, and it's followed by chapter 30, Krishna's hiding from the gopis. They're such important pastimes. We learn so many wonderful lessons from these. And also, chapter 31 is songs by the gopis, and 32 is Krishna returns to the gopis. And then chapter 33 is the description of the Rasadas itself. So these are very, very beautiful, and there's no way that during this short session we'll be able to read all. But if you do, like one devoted godbrother of mine did, and I'm not recommending this for a moment, honest, but he used to hide away in the cupboard in Bury Place that we had. We had a cupboard up at the top of the stairs where the Brahmachari ashram was. And that was where everybody used to keep the sleeping bags. Because in those days, we didn't have beds, we just had sleeping bags and we slept on the floor. So everybody would put their sleeping bags in this cupboard opposite the Brahmachari room. And there was a small room, maybe a dozen Brahmacharis sleeping on the floor in there. So there wasn't much room to do anything except chant Hare Krishna all night long. But this one devotee godbrother of mine, he used to go and take a torch and go and hide in the cupboard and read the Krishna book or read Prabhupada's books, because in there he figured the temple commander wouldn't be able to find him when he did. He said this. And in this way, yeah, this is a tip for both the temple commander and everyone else. But anyway, the idea is that it's so important to read these books, and somehow or other, if we can try to find the opportunity and steal the time in our short lives to read these books that Srila Prabhupada so kindly gave us, then this will be our great good fortune. But please don't neglect your devotional services. But hearing is so important. Prabhupada explains that hearing is what underpins all our devotional services. Without hearing, without this shravana, then the rest actually will be very difficult to maintain. Actually, it won't be successful unless we regularly take part. Because sometimes people say that the watering process, the watering the seed process, is chanting Hare Krishna. That is a fact, but actually the watering process, as is explained by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is Shravanam Kirtanam. Without the Shravanam, what the Kirtanam will be? The Shravanam is essential for the development of our devotional service, for the progressive march of our devotional service. So, and Prabhupada has given us no end of opportunities through these incredible liturgies to have first-class shravana. In fact, he writes in the beginning in the preface of The Nature of Devotion, just to give us the hint, he says there that one who reads this book associates with Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. And he says one who follows the instructions in this book serves his lotus feet. So if you want association with Śrīla Prabhupāda, then if we try to hear his words, because the Śrīmad Bhāgavatam itself says that the words of the pure devotee are very special. They're mixed with the saffron dust-like particles from the lotus feet of the Lord. And so these words are incredibly potent, and when we hear them, they enter our hearts, and they change everything. As I'm sure pretty much everyone knows, by reading these books, by hearing something from Śrīla Prabhupāda, it changed everything, and it made us gradually become devotees of Krishna. So if it can have that much change in our life in the beginning, if we carry on reading these books and hearing from Śrīla Prabhupāda, what a difference our lives will change into. It will be very good. So anyway, what I'd like to do is recommend the reading of these chapters if you can. If you can't read them all today, then please do try to read them during this very special month of Karti and appreciate the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But what I'd like to do is read a little bit from the introduction to the Rasa Dance, because this kind of sets the scene. Very important we hear this, because then we won't misunderstand what the Rasa Dance is about. Because actually anyone who hears about this, generally speaking, because our minds are very much polluted by material conceptions of life, therefore we misunderstand everything about spiritual life. But the whole process of the shravanam, just like a child going to school, as Prabhupada explains, the process of the child going to school is not really to learn, but it's to unlearn all the nonsense that we've picked up in the formative years. And so these literatures are meant for dispelling all our material conceptions about what life is all about and who we are, what we are, and who is Krishna. So these are very powerful. It's like the sun rising in the heart. And when the sun rises, all the darkness immediately runs away. So let us read something from Śrīla Prabhupāda's Krishna. With your permission. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo Bhagavate.
So chapter 29, the Rasa Dance, introduction. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the Rasa Dance took place on the full moon night of the Sharad season. From the statements of previous chapters, it appears that the festival of Govardhan Puja was performed just after the dark moon night of the month of Kartik. And thereafter the ceremony of Bhadra Dvitiya was performed. Then the wrath of Indra was exhibited in the shape of torrents of rain and hailstones, and Lord Krishna held up Govardhan Hill for 7 days, until the 9th day of the moon. Thereafter, on the 10th day, the inhabitants of Vrindavan were talking amongst themselves about the wonderful activities of Krishna, and the next day, Akadashi was observed by Nanda Maharaj. On the next day, Dvadashi, Nanda Maharaj went to take a bath in the Ganges and was arrested by one of the men of Varuna. Then he was released by Lord Krishna. Then Nanda Maharaj, along with the cowherd men, was shown the spiritual sky. So these are all very wonderful pastimes, just a very brief recap about some of the events that take place, because after all, Govardhan Puja is a little while from now, so it's just after the this special full moon night. So in this way, the full moon night of the Sharat season came to an end. The full moon night of Ashvina is called Sharat Purnima. It appears from the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna had to wait for another year for such a moon before enjoying the rasa dance with the gopis. At the age of 7 years, he lifted Govardhan Hill. Therefore, the rasa dance took place during his 8th year. These are very significant points because, generally speaking, when you see pictures from many places of the rasa dance, you see Krishna appearing as a young man dancing with young girls. But here it's understood he's actually just a young boy. He's 8 years old. He's in his 8th year when he's performing this rasa lila. So we should understand that even the presentation of the rasa dance is a very innocent and beautiful affair. But as we will understand, as we read this Krishna book, we'll also understand the transcendental position of Lord Krishna and the damsels of Braj, and we can begin to understand the totally transcendental nature of this extraordinary pastime. From the Vedic literature, it appears that when a theatrical actor dances among many dancing girls, the group dance is called a rasa dance. When Krishna saw the full moon night of the Sharat season, decorated with seasonal flowers, especially the Mallika flowers, which are very fragrant, he remembered the gopis' prayers to the goddess Katyayani, wherein they prayed for Krishna to be their husband. He thought that the full moon night of the Sharat season was just suitable for a nice dance. So their desire to have Krishna as their husband would then be fulfilled. The words used in this connection in Srimad Bhagavatam are Bhagavan Api. This means that although Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus has no desire that needs to be fulfilled, because he is always full with 6 opulences, he still wanted to enjoy the company of the gopis in the rasa dance. Bhagavan Api signifies that this dance is not like the ordinary dancing of young boys and young girls. Shri Shri Radha Nandineshwara ki jai. Shri Jagannath Prabhudeva Swarupa ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nithyananda ki jai. Shri Giri Govardhan ki jai. So Bhagavan Api signifies that this dance is not like the ordinary dancing of young boys and girls. The specific words used in Srimad Bhagavatam are Yogamayam Upashritam, which means that this dancing with the gopis is on the platform of Yogamaya, not Mahamaya. The dancing of young boys and girls within the material world is in the kingdom of Mahamaya, or the external energy. The rasa dance of Krishna with the gopis is on the platform of Yogamaya. The difference between the platforms of Yogamaya and Mahamaya is compared in the Chaitanya Charitamrita to the difference between gold and iron. Yes, good. From the viewpoint of metallurgy, gold and iron are both metals. But the quality is completely different, as you'll appreciate. What's the difference between gold and iron?
Iron rusts.
Iron rusts?
Very dense.
Yes.
Dense.
Iron.
Dull.
Iron keeps away demons.
Iron, what's it?
Keeps away demons.
Really?
Huh?
It's also cheap.
Cheap and not very nice. You use it for making the girders in the buildings, but. But then the gold looks very beautiful and is very powerful and has wonderful qualities. Okay. Similarly, although the rasa dance and Lord Krishna's association with the gopis appear like the ordinary mixing of young boys and girls, the quality is completely different. The difference is appreciated by great Vaishnavas because they can understand the difference between love of Krishna and lust. Now this is a very interesting point that we're going to read now. On the Mahamaya platform, dances take place on the basis of sense gratification. But when Krishna called the gopis by sounding his flute, the gopis very hurriedly rushed towards the spot of the rasa dance with the transcendental desire to satisfy Krishna. The author of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, has explained that lust means sense gratification, and love also means sense gratification, but for Krishna. In other words, when activities are enacted on the platform of personal sense gratification, they are called material activities. But when they are enacted for the satisfaction of Krishna, they are spiritual activities. On any platform of activities, the principle of sense gratification is there. But on the spiritual platform, sense gratification is for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Whereas on the material platform, it is for the performer. For example, on the material platform, when a servant serves a master, he is trying to satisfy not the senses of his master, but his own senses. The servant would not serve the master if the payment stopped. That means that the servant engages himself in the service of the master just to satisfy his own senses. On the spiritual platform, however, the servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead serves Krishna without payment, and he continues his service in all conditions. That is the difference between Krishna consciousness and material consciousness. So we see the devotees in the temple, no one is being paid to come here and chant Hare Krishna and dance and render service and distribute books and see the deity. In fact, we can understand that it's a great privilege. We should be prepared to pay any price to have such a good opportunity. This is very good. So, and why should we stop? Why should we stop serving Krishna? Rather, there is every incentive for the devotees. They want to serve Krishna more and more and become more and more engaged in loving service to Krishna. That is the nature of devotional service. As mentioned above, it appears that Krishna enjoyed the rasa dance with the gopis when he was 8 years old. At that time, many of the gopis were married because in India, especially in those days, girls were married at a very early age. There are even many instances of a girl's giving birth to a child at the age of 12. Under the circumstances, all the gopis who wanted to have Krishna as their husband were already married. At the same time, they continued to hope that Krishna would be their husband. Their attitude toward Krishna was that of paramour love. Therefore, the loving affairs of Krishna with the gopis are called parakīya rasa. The attitude of a married man who desires another wife, or a wife who desires another husband, is called parakīya rasa. Actually, Krishna is the husband of everyone, because he is the supreme enjoyer. The gopis wanted Krishna to be their husband, but factually, there was no possibility of his marrying all the gopis. But because they had that natural tendency to accept Krishna as their supreme husband, the relationship between the gopis and Krishna is called parakīya rasa. This parakīya rasa is ever existent in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual sky, where there is no possibility of the inebriety which characterizes parakīya rasa in the material world. In the material world, parakīya rasa is abominable, whereas in the spiritual world, it is present in the super excellent relationship of Krishna and the gopis. There are many relationships with Krishna, master and servant, friend and friend, parent and son, and lover and beloved. Out of all these rasas, the Parakiya rasa is considered to be the topmost. This material world is the perverted reflection of the spiritual world. It is just like the reflection of a tree on the bank of a reservoir of water. The topmost part of the tree is seen as the lowest part. So next time you see the reflection of a tree in the water, then please think of this pastime. Many times, if you're lucky, in London even, you might sometimes see the reflection of a tree. In fact, London, if you're lucky, you might even see a tree. But if you're lucky enough to see the reflection of a tree, you can remember, oh yes, this is a nice example of how we're situated in this material world. What's really going on here? So, is just like the reflection of a tree on the bank of a reservoir of water. The topmost part of the tree is seen as the lowest part. Similarly, Parakiya rasa, when pervertedly reflected in this material world, is most abominable. Therefore, when people imitate the rasa dance of Krishna with the gopis, they simply enjoy the perverted, abominable reflection of the transcendental Parakiya rasa. There is no possibility of enjoying this transcendental Parakriya rasa within the material world. It is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that one should not imitate this Parakriya rasa even in dream or imagination. Those who do so drink the most deadly poison. So this is a warning. Don't die. Hare Krishna. When Krishna, the supreme enjoyer, desired to enjoy the company of the gopis on that full moon night of the Sharad season, exactly at that very moment, the moon, the lord of the stars, appeared in the sky, displaying its most beautiful features. So please, if you get a chance tonight, if the sky is clear, take a look at this moon. It's a very beautiful moon. Very important thing. And you can remember that on this night, this beautiful pastime is taking place. The full moon night of the Sharad season is the most beautiful night in the year. In the Indian city of Agra, in Uttar Pradesh province, of course you may have to go on the roof where Tulsi Devi is, but that's a very good place to be. In Uttar Pradesh province, there is a great monument called the Taj Mahal, which is a tomb made of first-class marble stone. During the night of the full moon of the Sharad season, many foreigners go to see the beautiful reflections of the moon on the tomb. Thus, this full moon night is celebrated even today for its beauty. Now we're going to hear a very beautiful description of this night. So please listen very carefully. When the full moon rose in the east, it tinged everything with a reddish color. With the rising of the moon, the whole sky appeared smeared by red kumkum. When a husband long separated from his wife returns home, he decorates the face of his wife with red kumkum. The long-expected moonrise of the Sharad season was thus smearing the eastern sky. The appearance of the moon increased Krishna's desire to dance with the gopis. The forests were filled with fragrant flowers. The atmosphere was cooling and festive. When Lord Krishna began to blow his flute, the gopis all over Vrindavan became enchanted. Their attraction to the vibration of the flute increased 1,000 times due to the rising full moon, the red horizon, the calm and cool atmosphere, and the blossoming flowers. All the gopis were by nature very much attracted to Krishna's beauty, and when they heard the vibration of his flute, they became apparently lustful to satisfy the senses of Krishna. Immediately upon hearing the vibration of the flute, they all left their respective engagements and proceeded to the spot where Krishna was standing. While they ran very swiftly, their earrings swung back and forth. They all rushed towards the place known as Vamsiva. Some of them were engaged in milking cows, but they left their milking business half finished and immediately went to Krishna. One of them had just collected milk and put it in a milk pan on the stove to boil. But she did not care whether the milk overboiled and spilled. She immediately left to go see Krishna. Some of them were breastfeeding their small babies, and some were engaged in distributing food to the members of their families. But they all left such engagements and immediately rushed toward the spot where Krishna was playing his flute. Some were engaged in serving their husbands, and some were themselves engaged in eating. But caring neither to serve their husbands nor eat, they immediately left. Some of them wanted to decorate their faces with cosmetic ointments and to dress themselves very nicely before going to Krishna. But unfortunately, they could not finish their cosmetic decorations or put on their clothes in the right way, because of their anxiety to meet Krishna immediately. Their faces were decorated hurriedly and were haphazardly finished. Some even put the lower part of their clothes on the upper part of their bodies and the upper part on the lower part. While all the gopis were hurriedly leaving their respective places, their husbands, brothers, and fathers were all struck with wonder to know where they were going. Being young girls, they were protected either by their husbands, elder brothers, or fathers. All their guardians forbade them to go to Krishna, but they disregarded them. When a person becomes attracted by Krishna and is in full Krishna consciousness, he doesn't care for any worldly duties, even though very urgent. Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it gives everyone relief from all material activities. Srila Rupa Goswami has written a very nice verse wherein one gopi advises another, "My dear friend, if you desire to enjoy the company of material society, friendship and love, then please do not go to see the smiling boy Govinda who is standing on the bank of the Jamuna and playing his flute, his lips brightened by the beams of the full moonlight." Srila Rupa Goswami indirectly instructs that one who has been captivated by the beautiful smiling face of Krishna has lost all attraction for material enjoyments. This is the test of advancement in Krishna consciousness. A person advancing in Krishna consciousness must lose interest in material activities and personal sense gratification. Some of the gopis were factually detained from going to Krishna by their husbands and were locked up by force within their rooms. Being unable to go to Krishna, they began to meditate upon his transcendental form by closing their eyes. They already had the form of Krishna within their minds. They proved to be the greatest yogis. As is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, a person who is constantly thinking of Krishna within his heart with faith and love is considered to be the topmost of all yogis. Anyone know that verse? And who knows the translation? The topmost of all yogis and is the highest of all.
That is my opinion.
Yes. Krishna is giving his opinion. That if this is what you do. Abide, what does abide mean? It means the place where you live. So someone who lives always in that space of always thinking of Krishna within his heart with great love and affection. That person, and always serving Krishna with love that person, Krishna says, is the topmost of all yogis. So we see from Srila Prabhupada's life that without a doubt, this very kind and compassionate topmost yogi has very kindly come into our lives and brought Krishna into our lives. This is great kindness. So actually a yogi concentrates his mind on the form of Lord Vishnu. That is real yoga. Krishna is the original form of all Vishnu tattvas. The gopis could not go to Krishna personally, so they began to meditate on him as perfect yogis. In the conditioned stage of the living entities, there are two kinds of results of fruitive activities. The conditioned living entity, who is constantly engaged in sinful activities, has suffering as his result. And he who is engaged in pious activities has material enjoyment as a result. In either case, material suffering or material enjoyment, the enjoyer or sufferer is conditioned by material nature. The gopi associates of Krishna, who assembled in the place where Krishna was appearing, were from different groups. Now we're going to hear about who these personalities are and where they're coming from, these extraordinary damsels of Raja. Most of the gopis were eternal companions of Krishna. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavita Bhi, in the spiritual world, the associates of Krishna, especially the gopis, are manifestations of the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. They are expansions of Srimati Radharani. But when Krishna exhibits his transcendental pastimes within the material world in some of the universes, not only the eternal associates of Krishna come, but also those who are being promoted to that status from this material world. The gopis who joined Krishna's pastimes within this material world were coming from the status of ordinary human beings. If they had been bound by fruitive action, they were fully free from the reaction of karma by constant meditation on Krishna. Their severely painful yearnings, caused by their not being able to see Krishna, freed them from all sinful reactions, and their ecstasy of transcendental love for Krishna in his absence ended all their reactions to material pious activity. The conditioned soul is subjected to birth and death, either by pious or sinful activities. But the gopis who began to meditate on Krishna, transcended both positions and became purified and thus elevated to the status of the gopis already expanded by his pleasure potency. All the gopis who concentrated their minds on Krishna in the spirit of paramour love became fully purified of all the fruitive reactions of material nature, and some of them immediately gave up their material bodies developed under the three modes of material nature. So these are all very significant points to try to understand. And next we'll see this very important question raised by Parikshit Maharaj, who you'll recall is the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, is the hearer of Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, he's showing us how to hear with rapt attention, without falling asleep, or without being hungry, or suffering from thirst, but just hearing about Krishna for 7 days continuously. Because he's so eager to hear about Krishna. Now, I remember hearing from Shruti Kirti one time how Prabhupada would very much like to sit with the devotees, and he would get one of the devotees to read the Krishna book. And the devotees would just sit and read Krishna book. And I think it was Raghunath Swami was telling this one time that on the Janmashtami day, Prabhupada had all the devotees sit and just read the Krishna book. And he was, you know, one devotee was reading, and gradually the observation was there, because there were many sannyasis in the room, and the symptom of what was happening in the room was seen because these dandas that the sannyasis were gradually starting to waver. People were becoming very tired. Why? Because unfortunately, the taste for hearing about Krishna was not developed. But Prabhupada would have the devotees read, and then he would say, okay, now read another chapter. And the devotees were kind of struggling. And then after having read that chapter, Prabhupada said, read another chapter. And the devotees were just reading and reading and reading Krishna. And eventually Prabhupada was just reading the Krishna. Everybody else was asleep. But such a nice book. Prabhupada himself would relish this book so much. And if we can learn to relish this Krishna book and appreciate the beauty and nectar of this book, Prabhupada writes earlier in the chapter of the salvation of Trinavarta. Can I just skip back to that and read something which Prabhupada explains in this? I think it's chapter 7, the salvation of Trinavarta. It said here, Prabhupada gives such a nice example. He says, the conditioned soul has immense opportunity to hear about the transcendental activities of the Lord in these different incarnations. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, janma karma chame divyam. The pastimes of the Lord are not material. They are beyond the material conception, and the conditioned soul can benefit by hearing such uncommon activities. Hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. To hear his activities is to evolve to the transcendental nature, simply by hearing. The conditioned soul has a natural aptitude to hear something about other conditioned souls in the form of fiction, drama, and novel. That inclination to hear something about others may be utilized in hearing the pastimes of the Lord. Then one can immediately evolve to the transcendental nature. Krishna's pastimes are not only beautiful, they're also very pleasing to the mind. If someone takes advantage of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, the material contamination of dust accumulated in the heart due to long association with material nature can immediately be cleansed. Lord Chaitanya also instructed that simply by hearing the transcendental name of Lord Krishna, one can cleanse the heart of all material contamination. There are different processes for self-realization, but this process of devotional service, of which hearing is the most important function, when adopted by any conditioned soul, will automatically cleanse it of the material contamination and enable him to realize his real constitutional position. Conditional life is due to this contamination only. And as soon as it is cleared off, then naturally the dormant function of the living entity rendering service to the Lord awakens. Now, hear this point, this is very nice. Prabhupada explains here, by developing his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, one becomes eligible to create friendship with the devotees. Maharaj Parikshit recommended, from practical experience, that everyone try to hear about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. This Krishna treatise is meant for that purpose, and the reader may take advantage of it to attain the ultimate goal of human life. So these are very significant things. We've been given such a wonderful opportunity. And as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays, O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire to enjoy beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers of mine. What I want in my life is your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. And he says that, O my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benediction to the living being. And thus you have hundreds and millions of names, like Krishna and Govinda. And in each one of these holy names, you've invested all your transcendental potencies. Oh my Lord, out of kindness, you make approach to you so easy by your holy names. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. But I am so unfortunate that I have no attraction. So, how to somehow or other waken our attraction for hearing about Krishna, for hearing and chanting about Krishna? How to do that? What is the means?
Associate with those who have taste.
Yes, and particularly, you remember the tick? Just do it. Just do it, and the taste will come. Very simple process. Prabhupada brought that in way before Nike. That's how we actually waken up our taste for Krishna. Just begin to hear about him. Just take up this nice process of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And that taste will become very strong in the heart. And that eagerness also to share this nectar of Krishna with others. This is very, very beautiful. Okay, so in the short time left, does anybody have any questions? Because I'm aware that normally we have to finish on time. I remember when Mahajyoti Prabhu was here, we used to have a sign on the thing here which said the speaker has to finish by 8:30. So, but does anybody have any questions? Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, such a wonderful engagement, and thank you so much. I wonder practically, as devotees, how can we apply such readings, or let's say, how can we participate in such Krishna book readings where everybody can come together, not just temple devotees, but also congregational members? Because this, I feel, is really missing. And do you have any advice?
Well, I can tell you how in Leicester, for years now, we've had regular congregational group reading Prabhupada's books, reading and discussing Prabhupada's books. On Tuesday, we have Bhagavad Gita in-depth, reading and discussing. We spent a year and a half going through the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. And then, because it's such an incredibly powerful message, that it really takes some sitting and reading it and talking about it and digesting it. What are we reading here? What are we finding out? And then on Thursday, we're going through the second time around. And this is just the congregational devotees, really, because we don't really have temple devotees up there. But just the congregational devotees would gather together any place in a devotee's home or wherever and just start a reading group. And Thursday we'd read the Nectar of Devotion. On our Saturday night we'd read Krishna book. And this is still going on. And it's a very ecstatic pastime to be engaged in, just sitting and reading and discussing these wonderful books that Prabhupada has given us. It's so sweet, it's so nectarine. And the devotees have developed a taste and they look forward to these events as the highlight of their week. But the only way you can get to do it is by just doing it. Starting a reading group and just sitting together, whether it's in the temple or whether it's in people's homes, just anywhere, just getting together and reading Prabhupada's books. Because Prabhupada so much wanted us to read these books. He wrote these books. He gave us the attitude. He said, my Guru Maharaj, he wrote these books for me. And this also should be our attitude, that Prabhupada has written these books for me. So at least I can do is try and accept what Prabhupada has given us and try and sit together and read them, and it's ecstatic to read the books, and it's even more ecstatic to read the books in the association of the other devotees, because when we do that, it has such a wonderful flavor, and it's an amazing experience. So I would, as they say in the House of Commoners, I recommend this to the House. Is that all right, Bruno? Hare Krishna.
Thank you for your wonderful reading. There was this first, almost like a question. You know, where Nanda Maharaj goes into the river before a certain time, but we don't seem to follow it, because actually it's mentioned that at that time, Varuna Dev, with all his associates and the family members, come to take bath. But we seem to ignore it because there's a certain period of time between, let's say, 2 o'clock and 3. And this is also considered inauspicious from a material point of view, because if you realize how our body needs rejuvenation and we should be in bed by 10 at the latest, so different parts of the body organs, they rejuvenate at certain times. And if we get up at 12 or 2, which is inhuman for our material life. So I'm just wondering why we still don't follow that when we know that the Nanda Maharaj was personally taken away.
Well, we follow the principle of taking the guidance of the acharyas and the spiritual masters. And this was the case that Nanda Maharaj, he took his bath, it's described as a little bit too early, but we don't tend to be too much concerned with Ayurveda practices, but we do try to follow the directions of the spiritual master. And Prabhupada gave us these directions for how to live our lives, to rise early. As far as rising too early, that is not usually the problem. Usually the problem tends to be that we don't get up early enough. And as far as trying our best to follow the directions of the spiritual master, rise early and take bath, attend the Mangala Arati, take advantage of these auspicious days. If we can do that, then actually already we're doing pretty good. And Prabhupada, we pointed out one time when asked by the devotees about taking more austerities, one time in the conversation I recall, Prabhupada pointing out that you're rising early, attending Mangala Arati, chanting your rounds. This is austerity enough. So we don't have to become too austere. We don't have to become too worried about rising early. Of course, if you want to beat the queue, it's a good idea to rise early if you want to get in the shower, get ready in time for Mangala Arati. But if you have knowledge of these principles for healthy living, you can apply them. This is very good. But rising early generally is an excellent principle. And as far as why devotees don't follow these principles, I'm not sure who you're referring to exactly. But in the temples, I know that we rise generally before 4 or by 4 o'clock and attend Mangala Arati, because these are the instructions given us by Srila Prabhupada.
Although I have no problem between 3 and 4, I'm just mentioning between 2 or before 2.
Well, the one thing we also need to bear in mind, if we're going to follow these things very strictly, we need to see that the timings of the days also vary. Because we tend to see the day in terms of the solar calculations, in terms of the sunrise and sunset. But in fact, when you look at the Ekadashi calculations, then there is the other issue of the lunar day. because the times for breaking Ekadashi and when the Ekadashi actually starts depend on the conjunction of the solar day and the lunar day. So it varies from Ekadashi to Ekadashi. And as far as the actual timings, it is often difficult enough to just get the timings right. And to understand, even we use the GCAL program, the Gorabda calendar program, which is approved by the GBC for us to establish when are the actual days. And even on this, there is so much controversy. So to do everything very right is often quite difficult. But we do our best, and as far as trying to establish everything by the exact position of the moon and the sun, that may require some very expert knowledge to know which is right on any which particular day. But I suggest if you have someone, an issue with people who are rising early, then that may be best taking up with them personally. But these things are quite complicated to calculate. And even there are so many differences of opinion about the times of these different calculations. So unless I can't say much more, I'm afraid. I hope that will be sufficient.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Talking about calendar calculation, apparently today is meant to be the actual day that we start counting one.
Well, I know again on the GCAL program that we have
to. There's a mistake.
Who says it's a mistake? Okay, well, I'm not sure on what authority, because this is the thing.
Start from full moon to full moon.
Okay, but again, all I know myself is that we have the calendar program, and I'm not sure on whose authority that is considered correct or a mistake. So I can't book myself as an authority because I simply don't know. So. Hare Krishna. Mati, do you have another question? Is there something question on what we were discussing in the council?
Thank you very much, Luca. Earlier on you commented about you know, young girls in India and they're having children at 12.
Yes.
Just lately, somebody I work with brought this up and started talking a lot of negative stuff about India and that they dislike this very much about young girls, you know, having children so young before tomorrow. And she told me that, you know, it can create a lot of complications in the body because they're too young. And I was on the tube the other day, and I was looking up, and I saw this ad for this charity. And it was also a charity protecting these girls and saying what complications, incontinence, etc. they can be left with. So I want to help please to know what to say to these people, but also it has raised a little doubt in me because it can appear to be a bad thing. So I would like help to quash this doubt in me and what I can say to others.
Yes. This is the Vedic culture that the young girls and the young boys would be married at an early age. And in this way, they don't have to utilize their valuable time and energy and in very much inexperienced capacity of trying to select a partner in life. The Vedic system was actually very nice because the whole principle, as Srila Prabhupada explains it, is that boy and girl should be married at an early age. And in this way, they don't have to worry about who their husband or wife actually is. The Rakshasa society is one where one continually tries to find partner after partner after partner, making mistake after mistake after mistake. And the Vedic principle, as Prabhupada explains, is that it is the duty of the husband or the elder brother to make sure that the girl born in the family is married before she reaches the age of puberty. Because when puberty comes, then it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam that material desires hit that person like a whirlwind. So therefore, better that the wife and husband are already fixed up before that time comes. Otherwise, as we see in modern society, all hell breaks loose. Now, people may find it distasteful because in modern so-called society, a society of cats and dogs, where there is one partner after another partner after another partner, then for so many reasons, on a society based on convincing about the so-called equality, between even the thinnest physically inequality between men and women, they're very different types of bodies. They have different functions. I mean, anybody who can't see that is pretty blind. But that inequality is meant to be a complementary arrangement for the peaceful coexistence of the human society. When it is actually a peaceful coexistence of the human society, and I think you will struggle to find that anywhere in modern society, then actually people can live peacefully and prosecute the higher principles of life. Generally, when the Vedic society is that the husband and wife, they are introduced by the parents, and they're married, and even though there is no, no consummation of the marriage until the minors become majors, then in that way, they know I've got my wife, I've got my husband, that is everything fixed up, and the mind is peaceful, and people can live peacefully without trying to find some other partner, or without encroaching on someone else's partner. And in due course of time, then just by association, what is the principle of materially finding a partner? The principle is association. Attraction develops, and it becomes love, or whatever. But the principle is, as Prabhupada explained it, that even his own sister, she was 13 by the time she was married, and his mother was so much disturbed, thinking, maybe I should commit suicide, my daughter isn't married yet. That principle was there, and it was meant for creating peace and harmony in human society. So people have so many modern theories about what is right and what is wrong, but these principles have existed for many thousands of years in cultures which people insist on trying to portray as being very backward. But recently we observed the Dussehra festival, and people are so ignorant of the nature of this transcendental culture. But if they care to just think on the simple point, the story, or as some would have it, the mythology of the Ramayana, is built on the very extraordinary pastimes of Lord Ram, and in his rescuing of his wife from Lanka, we see that he built a bridge going across the ocean. Now people may say, oh, that is a myth. But the fact is that they say, oh, how you can make stones float on the water. You cannot do it, but God can do it. He can make rocks float in space, and we're sitting on one. It's called Earth. He can make beautiful flowers just grow out of the earth. He can make water float in the sky. We see it every day in England, practically. And we just complain about the weather. And if he can do these things without any difficulty, what is the problem to make water, stones float on water? This is culture. We see the weaponry, the sophistication, even the language used of the Ramayana and the Vedas, written 5,000 years ago in perfect Sanskrit, which is far superior to the modern languages, and which the scholars themselves admit is the origin of our languages that we have on this current time. And if they care to use their technology and go to Google Earth, they can see from the tip of India to Lanka where the bridge was. It's still there 2 million years later. And they're thinking in their arrogance and ignorance that we are so advanced that we know what is what better than these backward primitives. Ha! Rascal them. Let them find out for themselves and see this culture, the remnants of that culture are there. They're talking about the evolution, but actually this is devolution of the human species. And not only that, it is revolution. The Vedic principle is this is revolution going through 8,400,000 species of life. But these upstarts think they have so much knowledge. But they're simply ignorant. They don't even know what they are or who they are. So their standard of knowledge is based on all kinds of speculative theories which change from moment to moment, and they dare to present these as solid facts, as absolute truth. But we accept the Vedic science, we accept the Vedic principles, and we work on that basis. Of course, we have to work within the laws of the land, because that is the situation we are in. No one can deny the laws of the land. But the principles are based on ignorance and arrogance. So we should advance in spiritual life. If we're interested to advance in spiritual life, we have to give up our ignorance and develop transcendental knowledge. And we have to give up our arrogance and admit humility is the proper principle for approaching our real nature and understanding what is what. Hare Krishna. Is that all right?
I thank you for that answer. I understand that problem. It's still in there for me, the specific thing about when they bring up that there are complications there in the body because of having this child so young, and then it appears that it is that because people who have children later, they don't have those. That specific thing, I need to know how to squat,
I'm not a medical person.
Okay, but that I'm still having this, that is there.
And the medical theories will change in due course of time. But practically speaking, there is a time and a place, but and they may make so many arguments. But we're not recommending that people get married at 12. But we're having babies at 12. Rather, we're recommending, rather than trying to indulge in sexual activity, rather that people restrain themselves from sexual activity. But this medical science, people will have so many opinions. And what can you do? The world is full of unlimited different opinions which are based on their speculative knowledge. And we may or may not be able to help them. That is the reality. Because how you will convince them on medical grounds? But on reasonable grounds, we can see that history and culture have stood the test of time. And their theories are here today and will be gone tomorrow. That will be proved and has been proved in the course of time. So beyond that, what can be said? Hare Krishna. But these books, these literatures, this transcendental knowledge has stood the test of time. Krishna explained this very important conversation 5,000 years ago, and he said, I'm having to speak this again now, Arjuna, because previously this was spoken 120 million years prior. When he explained it to Vibhishan, and the science was lost. So this is withstanding the test of time, how long your theories will last before someone will come along and change it again. So there will be this policy, that policy, the other policy, but as Prabhupada pointed out, that as far as deciding how to run things, on which principles of sense gratification we will run the world, Lenin has his principle, Hitler had his principle, Churchill had his principle, Eisenhower had his principle, all declaring their laws about how sense gratification should be enacted. But the principle is that Krishna's sense gratification should be enacted. This is eternal principle. And what is the use of trying to study the policies of a dying man? Better to study the policies of Lord Krishna. And this will be a success in our lives. As far as the temporary issues are concerned, we'll just have to take them as they come. What else can you do? Chant Hare Krishna. And people want to nowadays meditate on Brahman. They think that because people have become so much absorbed in their materialistic understanding about what is what, that nowadays they want to deny the very existence of God. So-called scientifically, actually if they're scientific at all, they will accept that there may be something in these principles. But if they deny the principle's validity without having been checked them out, that is simply dogmatic. That is not in the least bit scientific. That is not only dogmatic, that is rascalry. They're against the principles of God. But even if they want to accept God as being impersonal, that they're determined to deny the personality of Godhead, we will recommend that, yes, you want to meditate on Brahman. Please meditate, read these books, because this meditation on Brahman is very easy and very palatable. So this will be a very good way to fulfill your desires. So beyond that, fight the good fight with all thy might. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Itai goa brahmani. Krishna Vasudeva ki jai. Itai goa brahmani.
Thank you to Bhagavan Prabhu for such an amazing